So I'm the first speaker, Bill Brandon from the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. So I'll do the moderator's job. Good morning. Thank goodness, don't have to ask for a second round. I doubt if I ever had the energy either. I really am impressed how many people are turning out this bright and early. We have three papers which provides enough time to actually get some ideas out there, and then if we follow the timing regime, we'll have plenty of time for discussion at the end. So I guess we'll, if my co-presenters agree, we'll ask you to hold the questions, and we'll use any extra time for even more questions at the end. My paper is all it's all about HIM, and to abbreviate and to explain that abbreviation, HIM stands for Health Insurance Marketplaces, and we're obviously looking at this on the eve of full implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And one of the purposes of this paper is to talk about the conditions for the success of health insurance marketplaces. Whoops. I did the arrows. Oh, these arrows.
These ones here,
I guess. Okay, great, thanks. Thank you. I skipped the presenter disclosure, not intentionally. My entire professional life has been interested in achieving closer approaching universal health coverage. But I have no personal interest in this because I have a pretty terrible employer's plan, which is grandfathered in, so I am excluded from participating in this. I should add, I also own no stocks in insurance companies, drug companies, or health providers. Methods and objectives. We're going to look at some of the history of past efforts to do marketplaces. To look at the policy stream. The idea is to distill some methods, some of the background to determine conditions for success. This paper was drafted long before the rollout of exchanges, so it's not a discussion of the eras of what appears to be an impending debacle. It's an analytical effort to explore the ACA conceptually with the purpose of generating a conceptual framework. So it really is at the sort of intermediate level of abstraction. And the idea behind this is to give us a background to an evaluation effort. There are only a couple of places where I will refer to facts that have emerged since October the 1st regarding the enrollment in health insurance marketplaces. And my reason for doing that and my observations, where they are practical observations about what's happening, relate to my own native state of North Carolina. So some facts that I've learned in North Carolina are relevant to the discussion, as you'll see. I'll assume basic knowledge of the Affordable Care Act, four sources of insurance. I do want to pause for a comment on Medicaid and its expansion. To me, it's very important and an underappreciated fact of the Affordable Care Act that Medicaid is absolutely transformed. Heretofore, it has been a categorical program, and under expanded Medicaid in the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid becomes a universal entitlement, which is the analog of Medicare. A simple fact of one's life, one has to say a yearly life, that is income below 138% of poverty entitles one to Medicaid. That is a culmination as a universal entitlement of the evolution of this program, and it's, I think, been underappreciated. That's also important for the success of the health insurance marketplaces. The HIMs really need to have Medicaid taking that lowest income strata out from under out from the marketplaces in order to be successful. The expanded Medicaid would take care of the people that the exchanges can't effectively reach. And of course, after the Supreme Court spoke, The health insurance marketplaces are the only change brought by the ACA, which is true for all jurisdictions. Well, some regulation of employer insurance, but the Medicaid is a state option. I've made an argument for this transformation of Medicaid in an extensive article in the Journal for Healthcare for the Poor and Underinsured in November of 2012. The first thing to understand is what an exchange is. The purpose for exchanges is to facilitate the sale of a complicated product, and they best function when they serve to minimize the information asymmetries. Both health insurance and healthcare are great or really terrible examples of the asymmetry that can occur in a marketplace. I'm skipping some of the material on these slides in the interest of time. The more interesting part of this paper, like most papers, is further towards the end, I think. Exchanges. I am following the template given us by John Kingdom, and his particular focus on three streams, and the focus of this paper is the policy stream. It's important to look backwards in order to project forwards. An important part of the Clinton health reform proposal involved exchanges, and Massachusetts has successfully implemented health insurance exchanges. Both the House and the Senate versions of the Health Reform Act proposed by Obama and the current administration included exchanges, and the House and Senate versions differed. As I'm sure everybody in this room knows, it was the Senate version that was adopted. The handout I've distributed on the back of it has a table which compares some of the chief features of the four bills and proposals that are compared in this paper. The Clinton proposal, as it was initially written and introduced into the House and Senate, no action. The Massachusetts connector and the House and the Senate bills that ended up as PL 111148/152. Clinton, to go over some of the chief points of the Clinton one, then I'll do the same with the connectors, and then I'll compare the House and Senate, and then I'll draw some conclusions. Clinton's Health Security Act, which he called initially HIPICS, Health Insurance Purchasing Cooperatives, kind of like the health insurance benefits that were in the original Affordable Care Act. It got rebranded as regional alliances, which they thought was more understandable or was a better sell. Proof is not in the pudding in this case. The Clinton plan involved an employer mandate that offers coverage, or if employers chose not to cover their employees, a payroll tax. Employers with fewer than 75 employees were exempt. Very importantly, it was, as initially proposed, firms with 5,000 or fewer employer or more employers were the only ones that did not have to buy from an exchange and therefore be community rated. They could count themselves as an alliance or a HIPIC, and they could continue to self-insure, which of course means that they're experience rated. I'll assume that people here know community rated versus experience rated, but if not, community rated plans, the purchaser pays the same for covering the whole pool of all employees covered. In experience rated, the purchaser pays only what the insurance company thinks is the experience that the purchaser's group will encounter. There were subsidies through the HIPICs or alliances to help the firms with between 75 and 499 insurers purchase insurance. This was famously managed competition between insurers, not between providers of health services. HIPICS actually collected the premiums, and then they distributed capitation payments to the insurers for the care of their enrollees. It was community rated with risk adjustment for minimal health, age, and demographic factors. Moving on, the Massachusetts Connector involved a mandate for both individuals and firms with more than 10 employees to buy health insurance. The history of Massachusetts has a history of community rating, so the imposition of community rating caused less of a requirement for structural changes in Massachusetts. Massachusetts Division of Insurance regulates the community rating requirements rather than their health department. There was a sliding scale of subsidies for individuals and small employers to buy insurance, small employers being those with 10 or fewer employees. And again, it is actually the connector which collects the premiums and distributes them to insurers. Health insurance marketplaces in the Affordable Care Act. This is the big picture. I'll skip through this very quickly. American Health Benefits Exchanges was the initial title rebranded in January 2012 by the administration as Marketplaces. Initially, the estimates were it would cover some 15 million people. The latest report I've seen from RAND in Health Affairs suggests that the exchanges will sign up more than 20 million people. A central feature is the mandate to buy coverage of both individuals. The employer, of course, was postponed for a year until the beginning of 2015. All of the subsidies, which come as from the IRS, go to individuals and small employers through the exchanges. HIMSS in the ACA, the basic organization, two marketplaces, individual and small business, they can be combined. They can be organized as governmental, quasi-governmental, or nonprofit organizations. And the key part is that they're an internet portal with telephone support and also possibility. Can you tell me when time's running short? One of you all, yeah. Oh, okay. I'm rushing, so I hope I'm not talking. I can slow down now. Thanks. Going first gives a certain obligation and guilt. Health insurance marketplaces in the ACA, the management. Everybody here knows, they were initially designed as state-based exchanges. 17 states, if you include the District of Columbia as a state, have elected to run their own. States had the option of joining together, and none did. It blows my mind, and maybe somebody in the audience can answer my question, why in the world didn't Rhode Island join Massachusetts as a functioning exchange and achieve efficiency and a larger market? So that's my question for the audience. And finally, there are often multiple markets within a state. The federal government, however, was the default value, and 27 states refused to do it, so the feds are running 27. And there are 7 which are partnerships, something invented after the passage of the ACA to try to get states involved. Key functions of HIMSS in the ACA. One is to certify and rate, that is, evaluate participating health plans. They're to enforce standardization of policies. They're to screen individuals' eligibility, specifically, too, to find out if they're eligible for CHIP or Medicaid, and either to sign them up in the states that allow that or to make referrals to the state Medicaid and CHIP agencies to put them into those public programs. They require participating plans to justify premium increases, and they have the option, states have the options of regulating rates, but the law does not require the states to regulate the rates. The states and the feds in default are to enforce the new community rating requirement. Historically, of course, employers have experience rated, which is one of the asymmetries in the market for insurance. HIMSS the employer mandate's limited to firms with 50 employees or more, and catastrophic coverage is available for those under 30 years of age in order to get the so-called young invincibles, which I think is a little bit insulting to young people, so I find I a little bit rail against that, but I'm sure some focus group of middle-aged people came up with that notion, and I apologize to the younger people in the audience for using that term. Sorry, that's a little bit of a side rant. Community rating will apply, except that insurers are able to vary price based on age and smoking behavior. Also, residence and family composition can determine what the premiums will be. The path to enactment, the MA connector, the Massachusetts connector, was a precedent that drove Affordable Care Act policy strategy with both mandates at the individual and the employer level. The commitment to preserve employer-sponsored health insurance is an underappreciated aspect of the ACA. And I have another paper in which I suggest this almost has 19th century roots in commitment to the marketplace, which is very out of place in the 21st century. Market-based reform is supposed to be operationalized at the state level, and one would think that that would have generated wider support than it did. The House bill had a national exchange, but the Senate was the one that insisted on state-based exchange, not a national exchange. The House also had the public option, which the Senate did not do, which got lost in the negotiations along the way. ACA's main focus is on individual decisions to buy insurance. It always seems to me the employer mandate, which has had a reasonable amount of attention, is a kind of indirect and backhand mandate. This contrasts with the Clinton focus on the employer mandate, and ironically, in retrospect, there's no question about the constitutionality of an employer mandate. So there's a sense that the employers, are sitting out there, and the next move might be to actually focus on employers. One of the things that makes it different from the Clinton era is that the public internet capability is absolutely essential to the HIMs in the current era. Similarly, for the Massachusetts connector works on internet technology, which did not exist when Clinton proposed his plan. And another important aspect that's different from Clinton is the expanded Medicaid, which takes care of the most challenged strata. One of the things this paper does, and I won't get into details here, but it takes the analogy of the airline seat. You've heard that buying through an electronic portal using Expedia, Travelocity, buying an airline seat, that's a metaphor, and I convert that into an analogy and try to ask, what sense does that analogy make sense? Is an airline seat comparable to policies? Well, one of the things to make it comparable is to focus on commodification. A seat, we all understand an airline seat. You must make health insurance policies as nearly interchangeable, the notion of commodities, as airline or airplane seats are. So you got to ask, can you divide insurance units up into substitutable units? This suggests two ways that the ACA can fail. One is if the insurance that's offered to the consumer is too complicated to understand, and a second way is a failure in the will to implement the bill. By failure, I mean making sure that rates are regulated, make sure there's no selection and bias to use risk adjustment after premiums are set in a manner that actually disciplines the insurance company. Commodification itself is actually a price restraint. If you think about a commodities market, a seller has an incentive to maximize volume using it's essentially called marginal cost pricing, and becomes a price taker. If you have a unique product, that allows the seller to maximize profit, not volume, and that's the description of a price maker. A digital portal actually makes it very difficult to do marginal pricing, which is in between the two, is cutting it up to different consumer markets. You have to have commodification. The next step is competition, which is the principal cost control, a Republican idea. Competing insurance companies, the philosophy goes, will restrain premium increases. And competition, therefore, should be on price and quality of service. That would leave decisions about the essential benefit and the four tiers of cost sharing to be the basis for competition. The HIMs are mandated to review rates, not necessary to regulate them. States have the option to regulate. I fear that the federal government won't regulate the rates. The Achilles heel of the Affordable Care Act is, I think, the health insurance markets. One of the concerns is the markets are too small, maybe too small to generate robust competition. It's a small slice of the population, unlike what Clinton proposed. It includes people with no other possible coverage, no other way to get coverage. Large markets are important because there are some fixed cost insurance you want to spread among a number of insureds, and also if you have you need large numbers to avoid the risk of higher users that won't be distributed over more healthy people. So it's possible, though you don't read much about this, that the entire individual and small group market may suffer adverse selection. The House bill had a national exchange. The feds actually have some experience in running national exchanges. They do it in Medigap policies, and they do it with the federal employee health benefits. Assessing competition, and the other dimension which the paper goes into is communication. Competition, one of the fears is that many of the federal HIM, since they're state-based, will have fewer uninsureds to have effective competition, that they will serve only some part, and some of the insurers only serve part of a state. Communication, the Massachusetts showed us you can be successful, but you have to do a great job of selling it. Kingsdale described it as a continuing campaign. That, of course, is a failure of the federal government for the exchanges it's been responsible for. The premiums and the insurance terms were released late. Navigator grants were made at the beginning of the summer. The hiring and training was therefore delayed. Some of the training didn't begin until mid-September. Assessing commodification. I use North Carolina based on a presentation by Pam Silverman, my native state. Failure to commodify. This is the choices of plans vary. That is, a consumer has to go through these seven, can make decisions based on plans given seven different variables. Four or five metals and the catastrophic, that's part of the ACA. The plan provider network. Some providers are in and some aren't. A consumer needs to know that. In addition, in North Carolina, the insurers are offering you the plan that you choose with or without a health savings account. There are actually variation in the benefits beyond the essential benefit. There's also variation in how the patient cost sharing is distributed. Of course, the cost share is an average, and it's the actuarial value of the plan, but different individuals may expect to have different expenses, so may wish to share the patient cost sharing in different manners. And that, of course, is in addition to the variables of cost to the consumer. The consumer needs to know what the premium would be minus the subsidy from the federal government if they have incomes below 400% of poverty. The consumer below 250% of poverty gets a reduction in cost sharing. So that needs to be calculated too. So it's a complex decision matrix. Additional factoid from North Carolina. We were funded in my region with 6,400 hours of paid navigators to assist people. There are 80,000 people that are eligible for this insurance. That doesn't work out. That's not a continuing campaign. Conclusion, two more slides, three more maybe. I conclude with a broader discussion of health policy, competition, and the opposition to the Affordable Care Act. I limit it here to just two points that nobody seems to ever make explicit, and maybe that's because it's so obvious and I'm insulting you to say the obvious, but sometimes the obvious needs to be talked about, the elephant in the dining room. So the first is that market reform, sometimes called the pro-competition strategy or the deregulatory strategy in health, is different from deregulation in all other industries as a government strategy. It is indirect. The whole idea in health from the beginning of this movement in the late 1970s under Jimmy Carter, and Weissert argues under Gerald Ford, has been to control healthcare spending by controlling insurance. In other areas of deregulation, the arena of competition is the seller of the primary product, the airline and the traveler, or the mobile phone user and the company, not some intermediary like the insurance company. The second obvious point to make is that ACA is a voucher bill. Vouchers have always been the love of compassionate Republicans, the phrase that Ronald Reagan used to describe his social philosophy. And think of it, schools, food stamps, Medicare, at least under the Ryan budget, would be voucherized. So one might ask, what possibly generates the opposition to the ACA? Is it that the opponents don't understand the indirect deregulatory strategy using insurance? One of my graduate assistants said, don't be stupid, just say it's really just polarized politics. But I want to get to the point that there is another voice out there. Cannon and Tanner, who are at the Cato Institute, published an e-book in which they actually argue for the increased supply of health care. They wish to abolish exams that allow that restrict practice of medicine to qualified physicians. They want to up the amount of pure competition in the same way that we welcome a zillion silicon apps producers to produce and let the consumer choose which ones to do. This is a return to the Jacksonian era in American medicine in the 1830s when anybody could hang up a shingle. It's hard to believe that this is the serious intellectual think tank on the right. Parthian shot as a conclusion, papers influenced methodologically by two conceptual approaches, John Kingdon, by noting similarities and differences in recent health insurance exchange proposals from earlier proposals, I hope that I can outline some implications for success and failure. And the second thing I would claim for this is the policy that, as a methodology of taking policy rhetoric, such as the marketplace and the commodification issue, analyzing it as the basis for sustained reasoning that we can help determine success and failure. And then I have some references. Thanks. Was that okay on time?